Chicago, this is your new morning routine. Cap and J-Hood. Follow Cap J-Hood on Twitter and Instagram. Watch the show on Twitch. Follow ESPN 1000 Chicago. Stream the show on the ESPN Chicago app on ESPN 1000. And now on FM at 100.3 HD2. Now, on Chicago's home for sports, David Kaplan and Jonathan Hood.
Woo! Bring them out, bring them out, bring them out, bring them out. Woo! Bring them out, bring them out. Bring them out, bring them out. Bring them out, bring them out. Bring them out, bring them out.
Hey, good morning. Welcome into Cap and J-Hood in the First Midwest Bank State Street studio. Hoodie's on vacation. Connor McKnight is in here.
What up, Cap?
You thought you had the whole winter off after baseball ended? Not so fast, my friend.
Quickly. Very quickly, the time off. Nice to be here. Good to see you.
Good to have you here. We had our morning meeting. We went over all the topics. We got a lot on our plate. Some exceptionally serious and some exceptionally lighthearted. And I have a feeling I'll be the butt of some jokes later in the show, and that's okay. I don't mind.
Yeah, that's where you need to be on jokes, I think.
Exactly.
That's where you
got to be able to laugh at yourself. So we're going to start, though, with the big news of the day yesterday. Yesterday, Kyle Beach, former number one pick of the Chicago Blackhawks, revealed on TSN in Canada, which is the ESPN of Canada, he revealed that he is John Doe number one suing the Chicago Blackhawks. He was on with Rick Westhead, who has been at the forefront of the investigative coverage of this Blackhawks sexual abuse scandal. And that 25-minute interview was incredible.
It was gut-wrenching.
Gut-wrenching.
It was absolutely horrifying to watch. And I sat down and I watched. Actually, Danny texted about doing the show. Hey, coming in, everything like that. And we were shooting around a couple of different things. And then about 2 hours later, like right in the middle of our texting, I'd gotten up to go do something. And the news broke on Twitter that was Kyle. I clicked the link and watched the interview with Rick and with Kyle. And just, you know, seeing the emotion obviously involved in this conversation, seeing the questions, hearing the questions that Rick had to ask, obviously, about the situation was, I mean, it got to your very soul, right? I mean, it's this whole time we've been looking at this lawsuit, we've been looking at these allegations, the Blackhawks' response to it. And I think it was really clear watching this interview, watching Kyle, you know, put his thoughts and name behind it, how much more important these allegations and this crime was, this alleged crime was, than winning hockey games.
When you watch this gentleman speak, and he started the interview by saying, well, I didn't know what to expect from the investigation, and to see Reed Schar of Jenner and Block say what he said, he goes, I cried, I laughed, I cried some more, I laughed again. He said, I can't begin to tell you. It was validating for him.
And that's as much as, you know, there's a lot of words, a lot of emotions that Kyle talked about, but the validation of it, you could literally see him feel just a little bit more free while he was talking with Rick about it. As hard as this has been for him to get through and you know, at some point, hopefully for him, get over, although that's probably impossible, you could see him be a little bit more free with this report.
It was gut-wrenching to watch, is the right way as you put it. Gut-wrenching. We would love your perspective if you watched the interview or if you just read about the interview. Can you cheer for this team? Like, I got a bunch of cool Blackhawks gear hanging in my closet.
Yeah.
And I can't put it on. I would feel lousy about myself if I was wearing a Blackhawks hoodie today. And I love my stuff.
Yeah.
I was a season ticket holder for several years. My wife and I every year would go to that Blackhawks store. Hey, let's get something cool for this season. I can't put that on now.
And for us, coverage of this team makes this a little bit different, right? Our relationship with this team, yours and mine specifically. I mean, my first job here in town was covering that first cup run.
Yeah.
My very first job.
So Kyle Beach spoke. There he is on his first reaction to the Jenner and Block investigation being made public.
Thanks for having me, Rick. And thank you for all you've done throughout this process since it first became public knowledge. Without you and your reporting, I'm not sure if we would be here today. So I want to thank you first. And yesterday was a day of many emotions. I cried, I smiled, I laughed, I cried some more. And my girlfriend and I, we didn't really know how to feel. We didn't really know how to think. We just held each other and supported each other. Bianca's been my rock from the very beginning of this process, and I'm very fortunate to have her here and be able to lean on her and rely on her to help me on those tough days. And I don't think we could have ever imagined what would have going to come out of yesterday's press conference. And following it, just a great feeling of relief, vindication, and it was no longer my word against everybody else's, because a lot of things were made public, a lot of people were interviewed, and I really felt like there was a lot of lies told in the media. And it was very special and important to me to have that truth come out yesterday.
So that's Kyle Beach, who was a first-round pick of the Blackhawks, and everyone went, oh, he's a bust, he couldn't make it. And then you hear what he was going through. Obviously, that affected his ability to play hockey.
He talked in that interview with Rick West at TSN about the ways he coped or tried to cope with what happened to him. Drugs, alcohol, lashing out. He was, I think he's short with people. You know, just kind of losing the handle on things.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look through, you know, like I said, Cap, you know, I covered this team a little bit. You cover this team a little bit. You look through Kyle Beach's, you know, kind of player profile, the things scouts would tell you about him or whatever. Why isn't he making the team? That kind of stuff. He can't. I don't know if his heart's really in it. You know, he may not care all that much. Maybe one of those kind of guys. And now to look back, it's just so evident. It's so clear. Obviously, it's clear to Kyle. It's clear to everybody now. But this goes so much deeper than... Actually, here's what really hits me. Rick Westhead, the guy who did this interview on TSN,
that guy is a credit to our profession.
It's unbelievable. He tweeted this 30 minutes ago, and I just saw it now, and I think it's really impressive. He tweets, I'm speechless at the response to Kyle sharing his story. Hundreds have reached out already to offer support for him and to share their own abuse stories that happened in pro and amateur sports, schools and churches, the military, and within families. Thank you for your trust. That's why what Kyle did is courageous.
Courageous.
That's why filing the lawsuit is courageous. That's why putting his name out in front of everything is courageous, regardless of whether people were going to figure out whether Kyle was John Doe 1 or not. He went on television, put his name to these claims, and told you how he felt. And in some hopefully small way, or maybe even a large way, he's providing something for others that have suffered similarly.
Here is Kyle. What were you feeling days after the abuse took place?
To be honest, I was scared, mostly. I was fearful. I had had my career threatened. I felt alone and dark. It's tough to recall these moments. I think mostly I felt like I was alone and there was nothing I could do and nobody I could turn to for help. And I didn't know what to do. As a 20-year-old, I would never dream or you could never imagine being put in this situation by somebody that's supposed to be there to help you and to make you a better hockey player and a better person and continue to build your career. And just scared and alone with no idea what to do.
Who was the first person that you told about this?
The first person I ever mentioned it to was Paul Vincent. in a San Jose hotel when we were traveling with the team. Paul Vincent's an amazing man, and I've seen everything that he's done since this has come out public as well. And I don't have the words to express my appreciation for Paul. He tried to do everything he could back then, and when this came to public light, he stood his ground and spoke his truth. And it's men like him that make hockey great. And if you talk to anybody from the Boston area, I was flown out to Boston as a prospect after I was drafted to work with Paul. And ever since then, we've had a great relationship, and I always loved working with Paul. And he's probably the most highly regarded skills coach there is in the Boston area. And not only the Boston area, but the hockey world.
Kyle, when did you tell your family about this? And how much did you tell them, and what was their reaction?
I don't remember exactly when I told them. It was shortly after it had happened in the summer. My mom cried for days. She felt responsible. She felt like she should have protected me, and there was nothing she could do. And after that first conversation with them, we never spoke about it again until very recently. I never brought it up, and they respected my privacy. They would ask if I was okay and let me talk about what I wanted to talk about. And I did what I thought I had to do to survive, to continue chasing my dream, and that was to not think about it, to not talk about it, to ignore it. And that's all I could do, because I was threatened and my career was on the line. And if I had that in my head, then there was no way I was going to be able to perform at the top of my capabilities.
Gut-wrenching to watch the emotion on his face, to hear him speak. He was eloquent. You can't possibly put yourself in his position except to say my heart broke watching that.
Yeah.
It's the second night in a row I woke up at 2-something in the morning, and my wife's asleep, and I'm thinking of my four kids, going, what would I do if that had happened to one of my kids? Like, I don't know how I would have not gone ballistic.
That's what's, I think, so disappointing when it comes to those who were in power and had to make the decisions in 2010 about how to handle this. You know, whether that's Joel Quenneville, whether that's Stan Bowman, whether that's John McDonough, mm-hmm. whether that's Jim Gary, the mental skills coach, who, if you read this report, you talk about abdication of duty, you talk about just completely doing a disservice to a man that was abused and tormented.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you read this report from Jenner and Block, and Jim Gary does not come off well.
He does not. The message that Kyle stated to the 16-year-old boy in Houghton, Michigan, who was abused by Bradley Aldrich, it's powerful stuff, man. And then when he talked about Joel Quenneville, wow. And Joel Quenneville, as Connor just said, was on the bench last night coaching the best team in hockey, the Florida Panthers, as one of my sons just walked by the studio.
Is that the young man?
That's one of my boys.
There you go.
He walks by every morning on his way to work. And as I look at him and I go, if someone had done something to him, I don't know how I would have functioned.
I don't know how those in power don't so easily put themselves in that situation. How hard is it to look at a guy that you're in charge of the well-being of?
Correct.
Whether he's part of the team or a black ace or just a draft pick that you're supposed to, that's your guy.
Correct.
That's who you're supposed to protect. How hard is that?
And the black aces were the taxi squad of players that if someone got hurt, they could call up. They traveled with the team most of the time. We'll get to more of this. That message to the 16-year-old in Michigan, he said, if you're watching, wow. And then his thoughts on Joel Quenneville, who's meeting with the commissioner right now, 8 a.m. this morning. He's supposed to meet with Gary Bettman in New York. but they let him coach last night. I don't understand that one. We'll discuss that next.
It's Cap and J-Hood on Chicago's Home for Sports. Follow the show on Twitter at CapJHood. This is ESPN 1000.
Former Blackhawks coach Joel Quenneville met with the media today, and while he said he would not comment further until he meets with Commissioner Gary Bettman Thursday, he is taking direct aim at one of the findings in the Blackhawks report on a sexual assault allegation mishandled by the team in 2010. In July, Quenneville said that he first learned of the allegations against a former coach on his staff in Chicago, Brad Aldrich, through the media earlier this summer.
You still stand by the statement that you put out earlier this summer regarding what happened in Chicago?
I do, but I can't comment on it.
Joel Quenneville is in New York as you listen to us. Meeting with Gary Bettman today. He did coach his hockey team last night. They remained undefeated. And he said he'll comment after he talks to the commissioner.
Just for what it's worth, that's Joel Quenneville, obviously. I've got the report in front of me.
Did you read it?
Yeah.
All 107 pages. I highly recommend everybody read it because there are some that have varying opinions on how this all went down.
Right.
Just read the report, please. It's gut-wrenching.
I'll parse this as best I can, but it's going to come. The reason I think this is important, this paragraph specifically early on in the report, is because it's going to deal with Joel Quenneville's memory of this meeting. Mm-hmm. And in the report, it talks about the meeting on May 23rd. And in it is then-President John McDonough, Al McIsaac, General Manager Stan Bowman, General Manager Kevin Sheveladayoff, Assistant GM, and head coach Joel Quenneville, and Jim Gary, the mental skills coach. They met to discuss what had been learned about Aldrich and John Doe. Accounts of the meeting vary significantly. The participants had limited recollections of the details of the meetings. All of the participants recalled being informed that there was an incident between Aldrich and John Doe involving an unwelcome sexual advance. But for the most part, participants reported they had only learned about the incident at a high level. Gary, the mental skills coach, recalled telling everyone in the meeting that he said John Doe told him Aldrich was pressuring John Doe into his sexual relationship. Not that it had happened, not that this had already taken place, but that there was pressure being put on in that very meeting. You have a mental skills coach in charge of the well-being of players, not fully telling the story, holding back some of the details that were clearly already discussed, or at least as you read this report, were already discussed. This is part of the issue.
It's insane.
This is part of you have this meeting in the midst of a cup run, an hour after you've defeated the San Jose Sharks, and you still can't tell the full story? You still can't talk about what's actually happening to your guy?
Well, what I don't understand is, and I'm trying to go back to my coaching days and put myself, I never coached at Joel's level, but I coached Division I basketball. I scouted in the NBA. Like, I've been around those settings a lot. I understand the focus and the tunnel vision, and all you care about is the next game, and I get all of that. How did they not say, get Brad in here? You're suspended, pending an investigation. You're to have no contact with anyone around the team. They gave this guy a ring, a day with the cup, the picture in the Sun-Times yesterday where it's Joel and his entire staff with Joel holding the cup up in a hallway after they won it, all putting number one up. Really?
They gave him the opportunity to face an investigation or resign.
That was later. That was 3 weeks later.
Oh, absolutely. But that's the end result. So then he resigns, gets a $15,000 Stanley Cup final share.
Uh-huh.
And goes on to, wait for it, more jobs in hockey. More jobs.
And a letter of recommendation.
More jobs where he's got the pressure and influence of young men.
Okay, this is Kyle Beach. When Rick Westhead of TSN in Canada asked him on camera yesterday about Joel Quenneville, and you heard Joel say, yes, he stands by his statement.
I think that the step the Blackhawks took yesterday is a great step in the right direction. They accepted accountability and they took actions necessary, albeit too late. And the denials until yesterday, I commend them for what they did. Part of this process, I'm not sure what it was, 3 or 4 months ago, the NHL denied an investigation. They wanted nothing to do with it. They didn't want to touch it. U.S. Safe Sport also denied doing an investigation. Now, in statements that came out in the release, Stan Bowman has quoted Joel Quenneville saying, and this is not a quote, this is my words, but saying that the playoffs and the Stanley Cup playoffs and trying to win a Stanley Cup was more important than sexual assault. And I can't believe that. As a human being, I cannot believe that, and I cannot accept that.
Kyle, go ahead, finish, please.
I witnessed meetings right after I reported it to James Gary that were held in Joel Quenneville's office. There is absolutely no way that he can deny knowing it. And there is absolutely no way that Stan Bowman would make up a quote like that to somebody that served his organization and his team so well.
Wow. I think I'm glad that we live in a place now where we can kind of all openly acknowledge that there are things more important than winning. There are things more important than your bottom line as a company. There are things more important than your, you know, overarching faith in a church or whatever. And when it comes to issues of sexual abuse, you know, that is obviously the thing that is more important than those quote unquote bottom lines, right?
Than the ultimate winning result.
And this is why you have executives, guys at the C-suite level, people with degrees in either counseling or mental skills or just outside, you know, people that aren't in the day to day, like you were as a coach, like Quenneville was here. People that aren't in the day to day, don't get so myopic that are supposed to go, hey, this is more important than the thing we're doing, and I have to call your attention to it, and this is my job to do it. And they're employed to do those things.
Correct.
None of those people acted.
It's unbelievable.
None of those people acted.
It is unbelievable. And then they give this guy a letter of recommendation. He goes on to Miami of Ohio, their program, and then he goes to Houghton, Michigan High School, where he, wow, that's a guy from the NHL? From the Stanley Cup champion, Black, come on in.
It's got a ring. Name's on the cup. Still is, by the way. Still is.
Until he molests a 16-year-old boy, Kyle Beach, on his message to that young man.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry I didn't do more when I could to make sure it didn't happen to him. To protect him. But I also want to say thank you to him. Because when I decided, after a teammate asked me about it, when I was playing overseas, and I decided to Google Brad Aldrich's name, that's when I found out about the Michigan individual, the Michigan team. And because of what happened to him, it gave me the power and the sense of urgency to take action to make sure it wouldn't happen to anybody else. So I'm sorry, and I thank you. Kyle. And I hope at some point down the road, if he's open to it, I would love to meet him. Because unfortunately, we share something in common that's going to be a part of us for the rest of our lives.
Unbelievable.
His first words were, I'm sorry. Kyle Beach's first words were, I'm sorry. Have you heard sorry from anybody else that matters in this whole conversation?
No, we read Stan Bowman's lame-ass statement yesterday.
Was the word sorry used?
Never.
We heard sorry from anybody else?
The first time that I heard sorry was Danny Wirtz, who I gave him credit. I thought he was very transparent, and the investigation Reed Schar was tremendous from General Block. And then they released a statement last night after Kyle Beach's interview.
I don't know how you watch that part or hear that part of Kyle Beach's interview on TSN and don't get hit by it. And don't understand it right then that what happened here in this town 11 years ago was horribly wrong.
Yeah, the thing that, okay, the act happens and it's horrific and brutal and awful. How you don't remove him immediately. Shh. We're trying to win a cup here. Don't. Really?
Send him elsewhere.
You got to hear Kyle Beach on his feelings seeing Brad Aldridge celebrating with the team. Powerful. And you'll hear from Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews. The two biggest stars in the organization addressed the situation last night. Kane remains in COVID protocol, but he did want to speak. You'll hear what they had to say, and you'll hear Kyle Beach saying how it made him feel to watch Bradley Aldridge celebrating when they won the cup. And plus, we're taking your calls. We'll get to you. 312-332-3776.
David Kaplan.
Jonathan Hood.
This is Cap and J Hood. Follow on Twitter at Cap J Hood.
On ESPN 1000.
And the ESPN Chicago app.
Rolling on a Cap and J Hood. On ESPN 1000, Hoodie's on vacation. Connor's here. He's here tomorrow. We'll get you a Football Friday tomorrow. We will talk football a little later with Dan Wiederer from the Chicago Tribune and Jeremy Fowler from ESPN. We've got shot, no shot. You make the call that Danny has for us. I think it's Halloween related and more. 312-332-3776. We will get to Pastor Dave and to Scott and to Bob and the rest of you in a moment. We do want to play some Patrick Kane and some Jonathan Toews, who spoke last night. But here's Kyle Beach. What did you feel after you saw Bradley Aldridge celebrating with the team after they won the Stanley Cup against the Philadelphia Flyers back in 2010?
To be honest, Rick, I think the only way I can describe it is that I felt sick. I felt sick to my stomach. I reported this, and I was made aware that it made it all the way up the chain of command by Doc Gary, and nothing happened. It was like his life was the same as it was the day before, the same every day. And then when they won, to see him paraded around, lifting the cup at the parade, at the team pictures, at the celebrations, it made me feel like nothing. It made me feel like I didn't exist. It made me feel that I wasn't important. And it made me feel like that he was in the right and I was wrong. And that's also what Doc Gary told me, was that it was my fault because I put myself in that situation. And the combination of these and him being paraded around, them letting him take the Stanley Cup to a high school with kids after they knew what had happened, there's no words to describe it, right? There really isn't.
Doc Gary, of course, is James Gary, the Jim Gary, the Blackhawks mental skills coach and counselor at that time. Kyle, how you've carried this for 11 years, and I don't even know if it's possible to put into words the impact it's had on you. Can you try?
To be honest, Rick, I'm just beginning that process. I suppressed this memory and buried this memory to chase my dreams and pursue the career that I loved and the game that I love of hockey. And the healing process is just beginning, and yesterday was a huge step in that process. But until very recently, I did not talk about it. I did not discuss it. I didn't think about it. But now that I'm beginning to heal and I look back, it definitely had impacts on my life. I did stupid things. I acted out. I snapped. I did things that I never could imagine doing. I relied on alcohol. I relied on drugs. And I'm just so relieved with the news that came out yesterday that I've been vindicated and I can now truly begin the healing process.
Wow. Till I heard the interview last night, I knew they gave that predator a day with the cup.
Yeah.
I did not know he took it to a high school. You knew you had a sexual predator on your coaching staff. You didn't suspend him. You allowed him to celebrate just like any other member of the organization. You gave him a day with the cup. And you have to file the itinerary before you go.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's two guys, Mike Bolt and the other guy who work for the league. They're the guys with the white gloves.
The guys with the gloves.
They carry the cup. And, I mean, the cup sleeps in their hotel. Like, they guard it with their life. These guys, every year, when a team wins, they're on the road for 3 months all summer. Connor, you got a day. I'm taking it to Croatia, my home country. I'm taking it to wherever. They knew he was going to a high school. He's a sexual predator. Hey, man, take the cup with you.
I don't think they allowed themselves to really focus or even ask themselves how serious Aldridge's behavior was. I mean, if you read the report, I know you have, Cap, but Jim Gary keeps on characterizing things as, oh, it's a sexual encounter between John Doe, Kyle Beach, who we know now, mm-hmm. and Brad Aldridge.
Mm-hmm.
Not assault, just something of a sexual nature. And then Kyle Beach told him what happened. I don't know how you change what Kyle Beach is alleging into something of a, come on.
And then after that, they had that meeting. They did not suspend him. And the Predator, after a team event 2 weeks later, was riding in a taxi cab in Chicago with a 22-year-old front office intern. They were just sharing a taxi cab, according to the intern, when Aldridge,
yeah.
the Predator, reached over, started to touch him. He goes, hey, get your hands off me. Well, don't tell anybody what happened. Sorry, I had a few drinks.
The one thing I want to add is, I think you guys have hit on it already, but what Kyle Beach did with the interview was heroic, and he could not have done a better job humanizing what happened. And I think you've talked about it, Cap, how you've thought about your own kids, and that's natural to try and localize it, but you can truly, hopefully, people out there listening to Kyle Beach tell you the story, you can empathize for him, what he had to go through. This was a highly touted NHL prospect who was pursuing his dream and had it completely derailed by a monster. And I can't even tell you, forget all the garbage that he's had to go through in his own personal life, because that happened to him as a 20-year-old, when a person he was supposed to trust, who was supposed to help make him better, all of a sudden completely derails his career. And then, oh, by the way, he's got to deal with all these ancillary issues. And I'll tell you, as a Hawks fan, Kyle Beach, all the garbage he had to deal with from fans who talked about him being the biggest bust in NHL history. And then he tells you in that soundbite the substance abuse he dealt with, no doubt because of what Brad Aldridge put him through. I want to commend him for the heroism he displayed last night.
Here is Patrick Kane, who did not play last night due to COVID protocol, but he wanted to meet the media. He's one of the faces of the franchise, one of the faces of the NHL. Patrick Kane, did you watch the Beach interview?
I haven't watched it yet, but terrible situation and very courageous for him to come out and let his name be known to the world after everything he went through. I knew Kyle pretty well from a couple different training camps, just seemed like a happy-go-lucky guy and always in a good mood. So I think hearing that it was him and with the news and with everything going on, obviously feel for him, compassionate for him and his family, and wish back then we could have done some different things or knew about some different things that maybe we could have helped him.
Here's Patrick. How do the management failures sit with you?
Well, it's tough. I mean, you have a lot of great memories from that year. And, you know, I think just kind of learning the news and how everything went down, probably, I mean, definitely could have been handled differently. Most importantly for Kyle's sake, but, it seemed like the organization had to, you know, do what they had to do as far as, making some necessary moves as far as, you know, guys that were with the team back then that were still with the team now and aren't with us anymore. So, you know, listen, I knew Stan very well. I know him as a great man. He did a lot for me personally coming into the league and just, you know, over the course of my career. I'm sure he probably would have handled things a little bit differently nowadays, but you know, what happened in the past. And I think the organization made the right moves to, you know, get the Blackhawks going forward in the right steps and making sure we're trending forward.
That's Patrick Kane on his viewpoint. Jonathan Toews, did you do anything when you found out?
I mean, no, not really. I think, to be honest with you, and straightforward, I thought what I'd heard was this was the beginning and the end of it, and not that it was a joke, but it was something that wasn't taken super seriously at the time. And you know, I thought Brad being let go or resigning from the organization was the way that it was dealt with, and to me, it was water under the bridge. So had I been more connected anyway to the situation and known, you know, some of the more gory details of it, I like to say, yeah, I would have acted differently in my role as captain for sure.
Do you look at that time differently now, Jonathan?
Well, you know, I think it puts things in perspective. And I think when you're chasing your dream of winning a Stanley Cup, it becomes the only thing. And you know, as they say, winning is everything, and it just consumes your whole world. And, you know, obviously it was a special memory in a lot of ways, but when something like this that tarnishes it, it definitely makes you realize that there's more to life than hockey. And in so many ways, this is an unfortunate situation. You know, I think winning the Stanley Cup that year is besides the point. So I think whether we won or not, we wish that this would have been dealt with differently in some ways. Probably. We wish we could take it back and it never happened and young players didn't have to deal with a situation like that. Absolutely. So it's just tough all around. It's tough to say.
Jonathan, did General Black reach out to you? And if you did cooperate with them, what did you tell them?
I told them exactly what I told you guys of what I recall. And the specifics of that were a bunch of guys were talking about on the sidewalk outside the hotel, you know, just kind of briefly telling the story. It was the night before training camp started when we would have an organization meeting. I think it was the Sutton Place Hotel at the time. And that was the first time I'd heard of the story. And beyond that, like it was all speculation. And then that was as much as I could remember. So I tried my best, and I'm sure everyone did the same to share what they could to be helpful in the investigation.
That's Jonathan Toews. There's more to discuss here. We'll get your reaction. Your calls are next.
You don't have to wait till you're in your car to hear what Cap and Jay Hood are talking about. Just tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
continuing our discussion on Cap J Hood, Connor in for Hoodie, who's on vacation. Enjoy your time out of town, my man. Get some rest, and then we'll crank it back up. 312-332-3776. Start with our guy, Pastor Dave. He calls all the time. Hey, what's going on, Davey?
Hey, fellas. Good to have you with us, Connor. Doing a great job. I just wanted to... yesterday was such a good day for your show. And, you know, I'm a fan of the show, but the way that you handled it, and especially some of those callers, Danny was a champion yesterday. It's good to hear that kind of passion when something's so despicable. And, you know, I have a 20-year-old son, and I just kept thinking if that was him, I wouldn't be Pastor Dave, I'd be Prisoner Dave, because it was just so horrific. And, yeah, we should feel ashamed, and the organization should know that we feel ashamed for them. And the great thing about humanity is, yes, there's one day that healing and forgiveness does come, but that's not today. Today we're in the storm, and this is not the time to just move on. Those days do come, but it's okay. When there's like a trust, and it's a very tangible relationship between fans and teams they love. It doesn't seem like there is, or maybe there shouldn't be, but there is. And so that whole time is tainted. It's tainted. And you can't even enjoy it. Those moments where we were so glad that they won, and that's been taken from us, and all you can feel is shame.
Thank you.
I think you guys did a phenomenal job yesterday. And
thanks, Dave.
For those who didn't understand that,
appreciate you. Have a good day. That's our guy, Pastor Dave. Let's go to Keith on the South Side. Hey, Keith.
Good morning, fellas.
Good morning.
I've been a Blackhawks fan for 50 years. I just heard Kane and Tay's statement this morning for the first time. And my initial feeling is that those two guys need to be up off the Blackhawks. For them to have known back then that possibly happened and not say nothing, or think it was taken care of and not said nothing, I'm appalled. I'm truly appalled. The red, black, and white Blackhawks jersey will never be seen by me again in my house, ever.
Keith, thank you for your passion. Thank you for your call. Danny, where'd you want me to go next?
Let's take Victor on the north side.
Victor on the north side. We got full phones. Hey, Victor, what's going on, man?
Hey, so I'm a casual fan. I had tickets to last night's game. Great seats. I was excited to go. But I'm also was a victim of sexual abuse when I was a kid. And for a while there, I was really excited to go, but I kept hearing your show and the afternoon show and hearing the callers, and it just didn't feel right. I even started to feel bad whether I was being numb to what was happening to him and what happened to me. But you guys, I don't know, like the previous caller said, you guys did a great show, and I had to leave those seats empty. I didn't go.
Victor, do you think you'll ever go?
I can't say never. I could see myself, you know, trying to escape, you know, have a good time with friends and whatnot. But I don't see any organization, like, I don't know. I feel like they all betray me at some point, you know, saving their name and their brand. When I, you know, watch the Paterno movie or even the church and whatnot, U.S. Gymnastics. I can't take any organization for face value, but I probably would go just to enjoy and have a good time with friends.
We wish you all the best, Victor. Thank you for sharing with us.
Thank you.
Let's go to, how about David in Schaumburg? Hey, David, welcome.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. You know, what surprises me the most is how the Blackhawks are handling this. Obviously, they're dealing with a pretty nice guy from what I can, you know, hear and see from him. Why they aren't, I know he's got a lawsuit. I think he's asking for a measly $150,000. But I get the feeling, and I don't know for sure, that what the Blackhawks are worried about is punitive damages. Because I'm sure that that's going to be a huge number. This guy was a number one draft pick. This ruined his whole career. The reason why he was silent for so long is he's trying to rehabilitate his own career and have a future. Well, that didn't work out. You heard he resorted to drugs and alcohol. Who's responsible? The Chicago Blackhawk organization. Why they don't settle with this guy? Because if it gets to court and it gets to punitive damages, they are going to get nailed. And I hope now, I'm a casual Blackhawk fan. I'm originally from the Boston area. And I hope that Gary Bettman handles this the right way. Joel Quenneville, he should be asked to resign. And if he doesn't have enough intelligence to do that, they should force him out of the league. I can't believe that anybody would even want to play for the guy. You couldn't trust anything that that guy said to you. And this guy, Kyle, the league should offer him a job, and he should have the responsibility of handling cases like this in the future, where players realize they have a place to go to when your team doesn't help you out.
Yeah, David, appreciate your call. On the last point, they have experts, people that are trained how to handle this. Yes, Kyle has, unfortunately, horrible recollections of going through it. I don't know if that's where he wants to take his life.
If you heard the interview with Rick Westad at TSN, Kyle's just starting to heal from all this.
Correct.
I mean, acknowledgement and all that. I mean, it's just the beginning of a healing process. He said in that interview that he'd like to be part of an organization that does help people with this, not the head of a task force that goes...
Correct.
And finds that. So that's a lot to ask of a guy who's still
30
healing.
Or 31 years old.
Yeah.
312-332-3776. We play Shot or No Shot in exactly 2 minutes. And follow us on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN 1000 Chicago.